It's good to be with you this morning. We had a great guest last week, Don Houston, and I've heard lots of fantastic feedback from you on his message to us. Don is a registered clinical counselor and also a pastor in Summerland, and we wanted to bring him in and some of his expertise to speak into our current sermon series called Let's Talk. We've been looking at mental and emotional challenges, mental health and emotional health within Christians, what the Bible says about it. And we've been trying to start a conversation that enables us to express what's going on in these areas of health, because one of the biggest problems is stigma attached to mental health. And if you can break down those barriers and enable people to feel free and safe to express their challenges, then that's a great step toward healing. And so that's where we've been going in this series. And today I close the series with the same passage that I opened the series with, looking in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. And I'll just start by reading that right now. Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Now, a yoke that Jesus was talking about is a device that would go on an oxen, and maybe it would attach a couple of them together and connect them to the plow as they prepared a field for planting. And if the yoke was heavy or ill-fitting or had sharp edges, it could damage the ox and it could cut them and be uncomfortable. And farmers who loved their animals would hand make a yoke for each particular animal so that it wouldn't harm them and hurt them, but it would be a light and easy yoke which enabled them to do their job well. And so Jesus is using this metaphor to say that he has handcrafted a life for us, one that would not include extra burdens that we need to carry. In fact, he's saying, "Give me the heavy burdens, and I will give you a light and easy yoke," so that we can experience a lightness and easiness of life. That doesn't mean life is always easy, but we don't need to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders when we go through the trials we face. And so Jesus is offering this freedom, and this is an attractive statement, and many of us first came to Jesus because of statements like this. And maybe you have the experience of sometime in your past you came to Jesus with burdens and heaviness, and he gave you a lightness and he gave you a freedom from those things. But maybe since then things have gotten heavy again. Things have gotten burdensome again, and you're looking for freedom once again. Or maybe you're fully convinced that Jesus is Lord and fully convinced that he's alive and he's resurrected from the dead and he indwells you by his Spirit. But at the same time, the heaviness of life has got you down constantly. And Jesus is inviting us once again to come to him to find rest. It's an appealing call. Everybody loves a little bit of rest, at least adults, right? At least adults. Kids, rest is from the devil, right? I remember being a kid. My parents wanted me to take a nap, and I thought they were killing me. I thought this was literally the death of me. And now we feel like a nap would help save us from the devil, right? Like, it's just the complete opposite. We just wish this would even out a little bit. But we're seeking rest. We're seeking peace. And I remember one of the habits our oldest son had when he was about 3 or 4. For about a year, he did this every night, and he just wanted to make sure I wasn't getting too rested. He would just come into our room very sneakily and quietly, and I normally sleep on my left shoulder facing the edge of the bed like this, and he would come in and he would just stand right here with his face in front of mine and just breathe, you know? And he could have been there for hours, I don't know, but I would wake up and it's this creepy child just standing in front of me. And he never said anything. He just wanted me to get out of bed and walk him back to his room. He's just checking on me every night. "Dad, don't get too much rest," right? But we're all seeking rest. Our modern culture is incredibly busy. We're trying to keep busy. I know some of you, one of the reasons you moved to Penticton was to slow down a little bit because the lifestyle here is a little bit quieter. But we live in culture where these days we can't really afford for only one parent to work, so both parents are always working, and the kids are involved in 1,000 activities, and so morning is a rush to get breakfast into the kids and get them off to school, and then we're off to work, and everyone gets home late, we eat dinner on the run, we send the kids through their million activities, and then we get home, everyone's in bed too late, and then we start all over again in the morning, and we never feel like we're getting the rest that we need, and I see people nodding, right? Because that seems to be everyday life. We don't have the margins in our life in order to get the rest that's required. But here's the thing that Jesus is talking about. There's actually a rest that he is talking about that goes deeper than our busyness, that goes deeper than our tired physical bodies. He is talking about a rest for our souls. Because sometimes the physical tiredness and restlessness is merely a symptom of the restlessness of the inner world, the restlessness of the soul. He says, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. You will find rest for your souls." You know, I'm convinced, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this morning, I'm convinced that much of our challenges of emotional and mental unhealth have to do with a burnt out soul. That we have no rest, and we feel like the world is on our shoulders, and we're completely stressed all of the time, and stress leads to anxiety, and anxiety leads to depression, and all these challenges compound on themselves. And if we can learn what Jesus means about rest for our souls, we might begin to experience some of the healing that he offers. In the spirit of the series, Let's Talk, let me share a little bit about my own journey in this area of trying to find rest for my soul. You know, as a father of young children, as I said, there's very little physical rest, right? It's just a season of life, and I understand that. But realizing there's very little physical rest, I've had to figure out, well, what does rest for my soul mean? How can I get rejuvenated otherwise? And 8 or 10 months ago, I began to experience some symptoms in my life of restlessness, of weariness, of just being tired out. And I would come home from work exhausted, and my days off, I was just tired, and I was ornery, and I was turning into a Saturday curmudgeon with my kids, and I was getting annoyed at them much more easily than I should. I mean, there's times I should be annoyed, but I was just getting a little bit more annoyed with them than I should. And I recognized there was something going on that was unhealthy and something that I didn't like, and it was manifesting itself in a poor attitude. And my emotional health and my mental health were being affected. And so I began to examine my life, began to look at all the facets of my life and see, where is this coming from? Because this is not who I want to be. So I began to examine some of the physical elements of my life. And so I looked at my work. And being a pastor can be a burdensome job. I mean, you're here, so I'm going to just complain to you guys. You know, being a pastor can be a burdensome job. There's just stuff. There's all kinds of things you have to handle, and the emotional and spiritual weight can sometimes be overwhelming. And so I began to look, am I working too much? Is my work week too long? Am I out too many nights? Do I have too many weekends? And the honest truth is, I believe I've done a pretty good job of managing my calendar as a pastor. And because I've seen it so many times, I've seen Pastor Dad is always fighting every other fire. He's with every other family. He's out 7 nights a week. Every weekend is ministry. And I just didn't want that for my family. And the result is that there are probably times where you've noticed that I haven't shown up. But someone says, yeah. wow, okay. But here's the thing. If someone's going to be upset that I didn't show up, it's not going to be my wife or kids, right? So just so you know, that's how I do my job. and so I looked at my work life and I said, it's not bad. It's not me working too many hours. And so I looked at other things, and of course I can always eat better, and of course I could always exercise more, but I didn't think those were the whole story. And so, you know, continuing to work hard in those areas, I thought, no, there's something else going on. There's a depth to this weariness that won't be touched no matter how many Saturdays I can sit around, or no matter how many holes of golf that I can golf. Or this is not going to be touched by those things, but there's a deeper rest that I need. The problem was I was starting to burn out my soul. And I was carrying an emotional and a spiritual burden that I was not designed to carry. And so I needed to go to Jesus to find rest. You know, I've been on this journey now of soul rest, of understanding what that means. It's been a little bit up and down. I have lots left to learn and lots left to implement. And don't get me wrong, this had nothing to do with not having a good relationship with God. This had nothing to do with not having a prayer life or not reading my Bible. I was doing all those things, but I wasn't understanding what it meant to cast my burdens on Him and allow Him to trade His yoke with me. I wasn't getting into the rhythms of God, and I wasn't allowing God to be God. It was a lack of trust in my life. I wasn't living in the liberty that Jesus paid for on the cross so that my soul could find rest. Now, you and I don't have the same emotional and spiritual burdens, but you have some too. And so I want to invite you into what Mark Buchanan calls the rest of God, which is a play on words to talk about the rest that God offers us as a gift, but also it's an aspect of God that most of us have ignored or trivialized or felt like it was irrelevant to our lives, and so we haven't lived it out. And so we're missing part of who God is by not actively living in the gift of rest. Now, the gift God gave us generations ago is a gift, like I said, we have often ignored, but it's the gift of Sabbath. Sabbath, very simply, just means rest. Specifically, it was a command to the nation of Israel that every seventh day, they would take a break. They would set aside their regular work, and they would have a day of rest. It was a day to stop. It was a day to contemplate. It was a day to pray. It was a day to rest. Now, in addition to every Saturday Sabbath, there were special Sabbath festivals. There were special Sabbaths associated with different events throughout the year. Even the fields were supposed to rest every 7 years from producing a crop. Right? And we know this, you know, farmers today do the same thing. They let a field go fallow so that it can be rejuvenated to once again receive a plant. So this is this gift of Sabbath. It's commanded of us in the Ten Commandments. Let me read Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11. Moses writes, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So we're told to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, which basically means to keep Sabbath as a priority in your life and make it a day that's different than any other day of the week. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Prioritize it and make it different. And the reason in verse 11 we're explained is in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. So God took a break from work. God who never sleeps nor slumbers, God who is infinite in power, God who does not get tired, took a break. And it's not because he needed a break, but because he recognized the value of rest is so much more than the need for a break, but it's a stepping back to look upon your work and enjoy it. To enjoy and appreciate the fruit of your labor. So if God, who does not need rest, values rest so much, then we who do get tired and need rest, how much should we value rest? But here's the interesting thing. There's two versions of this command. Because there's two versions of the Ten Commandments. The book of Exodus gives a list, and the book of Deuteronomy gives a list. And the command to Sabbath has an additional reason in the Deuteronomy version. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12 to 15. It starts the same way. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. But then it adds another reason. Verse 15, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath." So this is another approach. It's not just because God rested and you should be an imitator of God, but it's also because there was once a day where you had no choice to rest. You were working every day, all year long, with the whips of the Egyptians at your backs and you had no choice to rest. So God is saying to the people, don't willingly go back into that which you once cried out to be liberated from. You are free from slavery. Don't put yourself back into slavery by working every single day. Take a rest to remember that you are free. So we get these two versions of this command. Exodus grounds Sabbath in creation. Deuteronomy grounds it in liberation. Exodus remembers Eden. Deuteronomy remembers Egypt. Exodus looks up at God and who he is. Deuteronomy looks back to the history of how God worked among the people. And Exodus is an invitation to us, while Deuteronomy is a warning to us. So let's look at these both more closely. First of all, we practice Sabbath to remember that we're not God. I want you to repeat something after me. There is a God, and I'm not him. All right? We need to remind ourselves of that all of the time. In creation, God said that we must remember the Sabbath. In verse 11 of Exodus 20, in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. He's the creator of the universe. He decided to rest in order to set an example for us to rest. And we are not God. And so we must do what he has asked us to do. And we cannot sustain the pace that we think we can sustain. In practicing Sabbath, we imitate God as a means to remind ourselves that we are not him, as a means to remind ourselves that we need him, and as a discipline to stop acting like we are God. The only reason I could possibly ever have for not resting is to believe that my world will fall apart if I do. And that belief fundamentally is a belief in personal divinity. This world's going to fall apart if I stop, which means I think I am God. And I am not God. And I can trust God to take care of the world and to take care of my world if I take a break, because he's the one who has the universe spinning on his finger. Sabbath reminds us we're not God. My dad grew up as a farm boy in a hardworking Mennonite family. There were 12 kids in the family. And they grew up just outside Swift Current, Saskatchewan, on a farm, mostly grains and some livestock. And I don't know much about farming, but I do know that harvest season is an important time, right? And I know that you need to time things properly. You need to plant, you need to water, you need to reap at the right time, not too early and not too late. And my grandpa, his name was Abe, and I know you're shocked that there's a Mennonite farmer named Abe, but he's the only one, I swear. He believed in the Sabbath, and he took a break every Sunday. Every Sunday was the day of rest for the family. And he and Grandma piled the 12 kids, I don't know, I think it was in the wagon for most of the years, and they took them off to church, right? Father Abraham had many sons, and they sang that on the way, and they took them off to church. And the rest of the day, there was no work. They weren't harvesting. They weren't planting. They weren't tending the crops. They weren't doing that stuff, because he really believed that he needed to rest one day a week. And he chose Sundays as the rhythm of worship was built into that. And Grandpa actually had friends who were farmers who would look at the weather, and they would say, you know what, I think there's a storm coming this weekend, so I'm gonna work on Sunday instead of taking a rest. I'm going to work on Sunday instead of going to church. And Grandpa Abe just said, you know what, I'm just going to trust God that I'm going to do what he's asked me to do. I believe that rest is important for me. So even if I think that this storm is going to come destroy my crops, I'm going to take a break. And Grandpa never lost a harvest, right? And even if he had, I mean, sure, that's a miracle, but even if he had, do you think God would have not taken care of him? Winston Churchill was said to have read a book every single day, even during the harshest days of Hitler's Blitzkrieg, because he recognized, even though the world was falling apart, it still didn't completely rely on him, and he needed to be able to rejuvenate and restore himself so that he could get back to doing what he could do best. Now, the world, will it fall apart if you take a break? It will not, especially if you trust God. We trust God with our lives on Sabbath so that we can take our own hands off of them. You know, the original sin in the Garden of Eden was a refusal to accept God's rhythm for life. Just like God said, you'll take this day and set it apart, he said, you'll take this one tree and set it apart. It will be different. It is not for eating. This day is not for working. But Adam and Eve believed that they would be better off eating from, let's say there were 10 trees. We're going to eat from all 10 of the trees. We're going to be better off if we eat from all 10. Why would we only eat from 9 if there are 10 trees? Similarly, why would we only work 6 days if there are 7? We would be better off. We could get more done. But what they wanted, the scripture says in that passage, is they wanted to be like God. That this fruit would somehow make them more like God. The irony was they were as much like God as they could possibly be. And part of the essence of what it means to be made in God's image is having the ability to stop. To have the ability to rest and enjoy the works of our hands. See, we think we'll be better off working harder or longer, but the truth is we won't. I believe we can get more done in 6 days of obedience than 7 days of disobedience. I believe 90% of our income will go further in obedience than 100% in disobedience. I believe that when we set apart what God has asked us to set apart, what we have left will go further than what we would have if we kept what he asked us to give away. God blesses those who follow his word. Mark Buchanan says, God commands that we imitate him in order to discover again that we're not him and that we need him. We must trust God to run the world while we take a break. Secondly, we practice Sabbath to remember that we are not slaves. Deuteronomy 5:15. Remember, you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. The nation of Israel spent 400 years under the hand of Pharaoh in Egypt, and they were slaves. They were working every day. They were making Pharaoh wealthy and rich and making his monuments while they were impoverished and oppressed. And God sent them a deliverer, Moses. Let my people go. And he battled against Pharaoh. And eventually Pharaoh let them go. And they moved into the promised land. The land God said would be a land of rest, where the fruits of their labor could go to them. But what inevitably happened is, again, just like us, they got there and thought, well, we can work every day and we'll produce more product. And God is saying, you have been taken out of slavery just to go into this land I've given you, just to become slaves again. You've willingly gone back into that which you cried out for 400 years to be liberated from. He says, no, you guys need to take a break. Working harder, working longer, taking less days off does not make us more free. It actually makes us slaves. And you can't become more free by making yourself a slave. See, we think by working harder and working more, we'll be able to make more money and have more resources and to be able to do more things and to buy the things we want and to have the experiences we want. But how will you ever enjoy those things if all you're doing is working? It doesn't really make sense. And so refusing to Sabbath does not bring freedom, it only brings slavery. Mark Buchanan says, to refuse Sabbath is in effect to spurn the gift of freedom. It is to resume willingly that which we once cried out for God to deliver us from. Again, Mark Buchanan's book is called The Rest of God. We do have it in our church library if you're interested. See, when Israel was in Egypt, they would have had taskmasters. And any time someone wanted to sit down and have a break, the whip would have come out. Get back up. If anyone wanted to take a rest or they stopped working, keep working. Because they were slaves. They had no choice. And there would have been people governing and taskmasters over them to say, no, you are not allowed to stop working. And all of us need to learn how to quiet the inner taskmaster that makes us feel guilty for taking a break. Don't we? You sit down for a minute and then you remember all the work that is yet to be done. Right? Your kids want to have fun with their parents and all of a sudden you realize the email that you haven't responded to yet. Or you sit down on your deck with a nice cup of coffee and all of a sudden you're noticing the weeds that haven't been pulled. And the taskmasters are whispering in your ear saying, get back to work, get back to work. Right? I find when I'm on holidays, it takes 2 or 3 days to get my work brain shut off. And then with 2 or 3 days left before the holidays are over, the work brain starts to turn on. So if I have a week off, I get like 1 day, right? So we have to learn how to shut the taskmasters up so that we can rest. You know, you and I were never actually slaves in Egypt. We have a heritage of faith that goes back to a people who were slaves, but you and I weren't there, and I don't think anyone here was ever an actual slave. So we don't have that history that God is talking about, except for the fact that we were once slaves to sin. We were once slaves to death, which means that sin and death had control over us, and there's nothing we could do about it, except God sent that champion of heaven to come and make a way, and he has freed us from the slavery of sin and death, so that I don't have to identify with sin anymore. I don't have to sin anymore. And even when I do mess up and sin, that's not who I am. That's just a thing from my past that I can once again bury with Christ. And I'm not a slave to death anymore, because even though I will die one day, God will raise me up. I'm not a slave anymore. And so when the taskmaster comes and tells me to go back into that slavery, I can shut him up because he has no right to my life. He tells me to go back into that bottle or back into that website or back into that thing and say, you're never going to be able to overcome this. You're never going to be able to do this. No, I can, because Christ has done it for me, and I'm completely separated from my sin because that no longer has a handle on me. This is who I am now. The other thing that the taskmasters like to do is, if you've started to gain victory over the sin, is they like to make you overcompensate over here and turn you into a little legalist, right? And so they start adding different tasks, and they start making, you know, handcuffing you into religiosity and legalism and turning you into a grumpy church curmudgeon and all these things. And that's not freedom either. Christ has set us free both from religion and from sin, and we need to walk in freedom and not willingly go back into either area of bondage. And we need to shut up the taskmasters that try to bring us back. Jesus liberated me from sin so that I don't need to work it off. I don't need to pay it back. I don't need to fix it. He's fixed it for me. Jesus did all the work so that I can rest in him. Jesus labored on the cross so that I could be at peace with God. So how do we practice Sabbath today? What does it look like practically today? And sometimes people want to take a message like Sabbath and turn it into something it's not supposed to be. We turn it into laziness. We use it as an excuse to not work. That's not what this is. I sometimes call that butt on couch disease, right? I suffer from that at times. But Sabbath is actually quite active. And so very quickly, with the time we have left, I want to share with you four Sabbath practices. First of all, daily, weekly, and yearly stopping to rest. Daily, weekly, and yearly stopping, stop, and rest. We need to put this into our rhythm, just like brushing our teeth in the morning, just like putting on clothes every day, just like we sleep every night. We need the rhythm of Sabbath in our lives as one of the foundational, most important parts of what we do. The nation of Israel had it mandated from sundown on Friday night to sundown on Saturday night. They would rest and set that day apart. The New Testament doesn't give us specific direction as to which day or when. In fact, Paul, in places like Colossians 2, says it's not really about the day as much as it is about the rest that we have in Christ. And so a lot of people take their Sabbath on Sunday because it's connected to the rhythm of worship in church, and that's great, but guess who can't do that? This guy, right? This is not a Sabbath for me. Sundays are very draining, and so I can't really rest on Sundays. And so for me, it's normally Saturday. And then in addition to taking a day, daily Sabbath is available to us. That those daily moments of abiding in Christ, of listening to God's voice, of being in silence, of taking that time to hear him, of reminding ourselves of Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Daily, weekly, and yearly, stopping to rest. Secondly, worship. God demanded that Pharaoh let the Israelites go for one specific reason, so that they could go and worship God. That's the purpose of receiving rest, is so that we can worship. One of the reasons Christians have typically practiced Sabbath on Sundays, as I said, is because it connects to the rhythm of worship, but Sabbath itself is an act of worship. It's stopping our worrying and working and our scheming and our planning in order to step back and be in awe, not of our works, but of the works of God. That is the act of worship, is getting away from our work to stand amazed at what God has done, to say the fruits of my labor are nothing, God, compared to what you have accomplished, and I'm just going to worship you. We worship on Sabbath. Thirdly, silence and solitude. Silence and solitude. Dallas Willard called silence and solitude the two most radical disciplines of the Christian faith. These might be the most difficult things we do in this world that has become so noisy and busy. It's never quiet, and we're never alone. The kids always find you, right? They always find you. But silence and solitude are exactly what the soul needs. One of the most important things we could do is just learn to turn everything off. There's lots of devices, things we're connected to, TV, cell phone, Netflix, all that stuff. If we can learn to turn those off for a few minutes and have some silence and solitude, we can give our soul some space to rest. Fourthly, and I'll ask the communion team to prepare themselves as I give this last point. Fourthly, we delight. We delight. We're told in Genesis 1:31 that after God finished his creation, he looked at it, he rested, and he said, "It is very good." He did all his work. He did his brilliant, amazing act of creation in 6 days. Then on the seventh day, he stood back and he delighted in it. See, we need to find things that bring delight to our soul as an act of Sabbath. One of the keys is to find something that you enjoy that's different than your regular work. Something that brings life, something that brings joy, something that brings happiness to you. Whether it's spending the day at the lake or spending it on the golf course or reading or whatever it is that you find delight in to bring rest for your soul. Sabbath doesn't necessarily mean you don't do any work. Maybe working in your garden is restful for you, right? Unless you're a gardener by trade the other 6 days, right? Find something that brings rest to your soul. This is the key. Sabbath is about not doing the things you have to do so that you can do the things you want to do. Not doing the things you have to do so that you can do the things you want to do and find delight. And in delighting in the work of our hands and in our labor and in the work of God, we are delighting in him. Dallas Willard said, "Sabbath fulfilled in human life is really a celebration of God. Celebration of all that he's done, of all that he's given us, of all that he has produced, so that we aren't responsible to make the world spin, but we can rest in the work that he has done."